March 1st, 1998, Sunday afternoon. We're in Lubbock because you're attending a conference here, or your wife is, and we missed you in Plainview. So you already know more or less what this is about. I've interviewed your wife as well. So why don't we start there? Why don't you tell me how a marriage and job is balanced with the activism that you both have? I mean, you're on the school board, she's on the city council. You must be busier than heck. How do you all work this out and that sort of thing?
Well, patience and a very good understanding between each other. On the days that she has meetings, I do the cooking, I do the cleaning, and I look after the kids. Basically get them to do whatever they need to do. And when she has meetings, or when I have the meetings, it's the same thing. We reverse the roles. Sometimes we don't see each other till about 10 o'clock at night, because my school board sessions, work sessions start at 7 o'clock in the morning. And well, my work, then I go to work, and then after that she has a meeting. She's involved in various civic and social clubs. So am I. We're involved with we're very active with the local LULAC council there in Plainview. And we're also very active with the NHI programs, and we're very active with our children. So whatever they're involved, we're out there for them every day, constantly. So it's a juggling process. We just juggle our time. In fact, some of the meetings that I've attended, I've had to take vacation time. So my kids and my family have suffered because our vacations consist of 4 days here, 3 days there, you know, in the summertime, because I'll take my vacation days to work on projects for the school or projects with Irene, where we both are in combined meetings. Sometimes the school board and the city council will have meetings together. So we'll sit there and see each other, you know, and it's kind of interesting.
How about in terms of issues or actual politics? Do you all talk politics all the time?
Our friends believe we do, because anywhere where there's a social setting, politics comes to the issues. Sometimes I differ with Irene in the way she approaches politics or some social problems in our school system, or she differs with me how my opinions are on their city politics. But we resolve them. We come to an understanding. We try to talk to each other and see where our issues are at. And then we combine them and see what's right or what's wrong about our opinions. And we just sit there and argue back and forth. Not argue, it's like a little forum between each other, over the kitchen table or over washing dishes or folding clothes, and we're discussing this. So we have a general understanding of what is going on, because the people she deals with daily are the Mexicanos, the workers that coming from the fields and stuff to her job, and they have different views of what the government or city or school politics should be. And the people that I work with are the middle class people. I work for Energas, a local energy company, gas utility company here in Plainview. And the guys that I work with are Anglo-Americans. And they have a total different view of the needs and wants of the city and the school system. So when I get home, I bounce ideas off of her, and she bounces the same ideas off of me. And we try to get in the middle of the road. And that's what I base most of my decisions on for the school system, on those ideas, after we have talked to different people in different backgrounds.
How does the public or the voters or the Mexicano community view this husband and wife team? Is it a positive or a negative?
To them, it's a positive, because we have people that call us with needs or problems, and it generally encompasses the problems that their kids are having in school. In particular, we had a problem last year where nine Mexicanitos were told that they were creating a riot. It was during spring break. So the police were involved. And then the issue of how those children were going to get, because they had trial and everything, how we were going to let those kids attend the trial and how we were going to get them out of school. So it took both of us in a combined effort to work with our separate councils to figure out what was going to happen, how we were going to help the children for the better of themselves, for the best, what was best for the kids. And so that's how it works, because people will generally call us and say, hey, I'm having a problem with my child. He's in trouble with the law and he's in trouble with school. So I want both of you to sit there and give me the policies or how can I help my kid. And it's pretty neat. Mm-hmm. Because you're right there and you have your policy books there. And you don't have to be calling somebody else or anything. We know what's going on. We can help them there in one stop shopping.
Well, that question, I gave you too many options. I said voters, people, Mexican-Americans. But you're talking about Mexican-Americans basically want to call you, right?
Mm-hmm.
Okay. Well, who do you think is the most effective Mexican-American political leader today, either in your area or in the state or in the nation?
In my area would be Victor Hernandez. He's a... Everybody looks at Tlubbock as the hub, the mecca of this general area. And Victor is pretty strong. He's come out recently and has stand his ground. I've always admired Victor for that. I've known him personally, and I think a lot of people had different attitudes toward him. But after he has come out in the newspaper and stood against what he thought was wrong, and he won, the people vindicated him by voting this sales tax issue down. I think he's really made an impact for this area, and people are looking at him in a different light. And like I said, Victor, I can always call Victor for advice. I can call Aliceo también Solis. He was a person that motivated us at the time, back in the early 80s, to getting involved in our community, to look at it in a sense that people out there didn't have any type of help or where they could call to. And that's what we did. I look at Eliseo and I look at Victor. I look at several other people, early politicians around the Plainview area that would come by, and Floyd Salinas, people like that, that would try to come by and help. Of course, they didn't have the resources to really help, The majority wasn't there, but at least they would give you a little bit of input and what was there, to help the people out.
And state and national?
State. State, I guess, would be Dan Morales. Dan Morales has come out and he's done some very good, has good ideas. I'm disappointed that he's not running for the governor of Texas. I think maybe in a couple of years, that option will be open for us, that he'll run for the governor.
National?
I met Congressman Rangel from the state of New York. We were visiting Secretary of HUD, Cisneros. We were in Washington, D.C., and I was very impressed with that man when I met him. He was very straight. He was very strong. He wanted some... He was talking to the HUD secretary at the time about some projects in, I think, New York City itself. And I was in the audience or just sitting there, and I was hearing what he was saying. He had very strong convictions for what he wants. So I was very impressed with Congressman Rangel.
Which is the most effective Mexican-American organization today?
LULAC. Of course, I'm a LULAC member, so that's what I would say, LULAC.
Well, you're also involved with NHI, and I'm sure a lot of other things.
Well, NHI is very good for the young youth. They're not politically motivated, but they're very strong for for trying to motivate youth to do what's best for themselves, to make them look out and say, hey, just because I have this brown skin and just because I have this Mexican heritage doesn't mean that I can't be successful in life. And success is what's going to breed our race, our culture, and bring it to the forefront.
What makes LULAC more effective?
I think they're not scared to buck the system. They're not scared to challenge people over what's right or wrong. And they'll go in there and they'll give it all it's got. They're not scared to say, hey, whoever you are, vente, We'll pick you up. We'll take you with us.
What's the most pressing issue facing Mexican Americans today?
Education. We need to get our kids educated. Not to give up on education. Just because you're poor and you think there's not any financial aid out there, there's plenty of help. There's plenty of people willing to help you to be somebody. I'd like to see, here in the state of Texas, I'd like to see a governor, Mexicano, from Mexican American descent. I'd like to see our state being foremost in having a high rate of college graduates, Mexicanos. We should. And, you know, into any profession. And then for those people to come down and help the ones that are coming up. That's what I want to see.
Relationships with blacks in Plainview or in general, what are the sources of tension?
Differences in opinions. The opinion of what's right and wrong. You know, we see the, you know, what we think is right, they might perceive as we're not treating them not right or not properly because some of our issues, since we're Mexican Americans, there is no black councilmen or councilwomen or on the school board. So they sometimes think that we've got their affairs in the back burners. But there's not really a tension per se, just they feel a little bit slighted sometimes. But what we're doing, we're trying to do everything for all the minority community.
Why aren't there any blacks on the school board? There was one and maybe more in the city council.
They just haven't really put their name on the ballot yet. So they're spread out. They're spread out in the community.
The school board by districts or at large?
By districts. And see, LULAC was very instrumental in bringing our school board into districts, as it was for the city.
How about relations between Mexicanos from Mexico and the local Chicanos?
They're very good. People intertwine because it's an agriculture community, and Mexicanos from Mexico have always been coming over here since probably the early 50s through the Brucero programs, and they have stayed. And those people raised their own families there, and so when the other people from Mexico were coming, make no difference because it was the same general background. So that we had the same things going for each other.
What is leadership?
What is leadership? Leadership to me is what you want it to be. You can be a leader by being straightforward with a person, or just even by your actions. Your actions can be leadership. By leading, not by violence, but by the way you conduct yourself. There's a lot of difference in meanings in leadership. You know, to me, a person that's a leader is a person that's very motivating and can do things by just speaking in his actions. That, to me, is a leader.
How do you exercise leadership on the school board?
I exercise my leadership by sitting there and thinking. And by looking back, going back to my constituents and asking them on some of the issues that are being asked, you know, or being questioned, how they want me to, you know, I get feedback from them. And I sit there and I make up my mind, and then I'll tell my constituents, you put me in this position and I have asked for your input and you have given it to me. Now I'm going to act. And after I act, you know, this is the way it's going to be.
How do you go about getting other members of the board to go along with you?
Well, by being persuasive, by sitting there and explaining to them, you know, my opinion of why I want this project being pushed, why I wanted to have a positive vote, and by visiting with them, taking them to, especially we have children that are being deprived, by taking them to the actual classrooms or by taking them to homes so they can see how the kids live, so they have an understanding where these kids are coming from, why some we have to have these feeding programs, why we have to have programs where we provide school supplies, because not everybody has the money to afford these things, and generally that's how I do it. by just taking these people around and showing them. And they're very shocked to know what really, how we live or how some of our people live.
Are you the only Mexicano on the school board?
No, Leonel Garcia sits there.
How do you get along with him?
Oh, we get along fine.
He's who leads?
It depends on what issues they are. It's usually, we split the leadership. Sometimes he likes other, he's very, a person that's very intelligent. His major was in college was business, and he's financial whiz, and he sits there, and when it comes to finances, he's the guy in the lead. He takes the lead. Boy, he's just like a point dog. He gets after him, guys.
How about relationship with the superintendent? How do you get him to do what you want?
It's easy. We just hired a new superintendent. So I'd remind him who hired him. And I'll sit there and say, hey, you came with these ideas. When we interviewed you, this is the way I wanted you, the perception of my ideas that I wanted you to have, and you agreed with him in these terms. And he's very easygoing. He is from Port Arthur, Texas, and he's an older man. And this guy's very neat because he came from a predominantly black school district into an all-Hispanic school district. So he's very aware of the culture diversity and stuff. So. And he's pretty easygoing, and he gets the job done.
How do you feel about the majority of the students in the Plainview schools being Mexican-American, but the majority of the school board is Anglo?
That sometimes is very disheartening, especially when we have four minority districts, and three of them are being held by Anglo-Americans. I'm the only one sitting in a minority district because Lionel sits in an Anglo-American district.
How come there's not more?
That's what we keep asking the people. We go out there and actively recruit people, and then they say no, that they don't want to get involved, that there's too much at work. We have too much work to do. They think that the time that they have, they should spend it doing something else instead of putting it forth with their to the public.
You think some of them are scared?
Yes.
Scared of what?
I don't know. I really don't know.
Is Plainview a prejudiced town, a discriminatory town, redneck area?
It's a redneck area, but it's a town that you can do what you, basically, if you want to run for government, for city offices, you can. And you'll win if you're a minority, because that's how big of a base we have. All you have to do is really go out there and put your name on the dotted line. And don't be scared to take the heat, because the heat comes with it.
What kind of heat do you get?
Well, issues about cheerleading, school books, fights, and the effects of fights. You know, what happens after a fight. And the heat is about, you know, we had a little issue with cheerleaders, and the people that got punished were Mexican-American cheerleaders. And we reinstated them back to school, put the position. In fact, the girls were kicked out of the cheerleading squad, and they were reinstated back to the cheerleading squad. And the heat was why? Why were they put back into the cheerleading squad? Well, they're civil rights were violated, so we put them back.
What was the incident?
Well, they supposedly had gotten drunk off school premises, and when they came back to school, they were kicked off because they were drunk, and they were supposed to be, you know, like a role model to the other kids.
And only the Mexican-American cheerleaders were drunk?
Yeah, well, they're the only ones that were participating. They were at a future teachers convention, and these three girls that were cheerleaders, they were at that convention. And for some reason, they got dismissed, or after school, they went to somebody's house and supposedly got drunk. Supposedly. Well, when they came back to school on the following Friday, they were suspended and given detention or whatever. Well, you know, nobody actually turned them in. it was another world, another girl's word, and it reached the principal, and they went through the whole process of kicking them off. But you have no, they had no proof. So they, in my opinion, and in everybody else's opinion, they violated the kids' civil rights. There was no proof. The girls never admitted to anything. If they were drunk or weren't drunk, we don't know to this day.
Switching over, how did you get on the school board? How did you do it? Why did you do it?
Why did I do it? Basically, I was upset because the former superintendent was really not attempted to hire minorities. And the minorities that were hired were never given administrative jobs or any kind of promotional jobs. And I thought, well, you know, I need to get up on there and I need to do something. I found out after I was hired, I was voted in, that sometimes you're fighting up there with your hands tied behind your back. But, you know, at least I'm voicing my opinions. And I voiced enough opinions and I voiced enough concerns that the rest of the school board started looking and say, hey, you know, things are wrong. Things aren't right, you know.
When did you get elected?
I got elected 3 years ago, which would be 1995, May of 1995.
So your term is up?
My term is up. In fact, I'm up for a re-election this year.
You filed again?
I have filed again.
The election is?
May 2nd, 1998.
And how are you going to go about winning re-election? Do you have an opponent?
Not as of yet. I am going to go out there and I'm going to win because I have been a proven leader. I have gone up there and told these, I have championed the cause of my constituents, what they wanted. We have held the tax rate at $1.27 for the past 3 years. We have hired minority elementary teachers, but anytime we try to hire minority, any type of minority secondary teacher, for some reason, San Antonio, all the major metropolitan areas, get them before we get them. And, you know, they also say, well, lack of activities up here in West Texas region. Another thing that I have done, I've really worked in not being a hands-on type person with the school teachers, but with the kids themselves. I try to work with the kids. I sit there. If a child has a problem, all he has to do is just call me. I'll go to bat for him. I'll go to parents. I'll sit there and explain to him our policy. I'll go to the school superintendent with him.
Were you instrumental in getting rid of that other superintendent?
Well, I would say that I helped along. I really helped. Because he knew that the type of person that I was, and I was, and there was two other people on board at the time that had the same feel that I was having, like, hey, we need to do something. Something needs to be changed. And then when Lionel came on, after we persuaded Lionel to run, he could see the right in the wall that we had the people to get rid of him. So he just retired.
How did you win? How are you going to win this time?
How did I win my election?
The first time, and how are you going to win this time? What did you do?
What did I do? Well, this is easy. I went from house to house and literally took people to vote for me. I would just tell them the truth. Hey, you want to change? Don't be sitting here telling me that you want to change, but you're not going to go vote for me. So I would just, my van's right there, my car's right there. I would pick them up and drop them off and say, go vote for me. Or go vote for the candidate of your choice, but go vote. And literally that's what I had to do. Go to every house in my precinct and ask them to go vote for me. If they were willing to go vote for, or just willing to go vote, I would say, okay, let's go right now. I took off 3 days for early voting, and I worked, my wife and myself, and about four friends worked that whole Saturday, going house to house to house.
You didn't do voter registration?
No, in fact, we had done voter registration like 3 months ahead. But, you know, it's kind of funny. I was just registering everybody. It didn't even matter that they live in my district or not. because I did it at a Walmart store. And people were coming in, and I was just sitting, you know, and I got to a point, hey, these people don't even live in my district, but that's okay. You know, I just wanted them to register by that time.
Okay. Of course, it also helped that your wife was on the city council, no? I mean, you work each other's elections, no?
Right. We always work each other's elections, and we always help each other.
Now, she's got term limits, and you don't. Are y'all going to flip when it's she can't run anymore?
We kid about that. And we're seriously thinking about that. Because my term will come up when her term comes up. And we're thinking about flip-flopping around and seeing what happens. I think it'll be good for the school board to have a person like Irene. And I think it'll be good for the city council to have somebody like me. Because we come from so different type of backgrounds. And our views are so different sometimes, you know, that they're going to be surprised.
Well, what are you going to do in this election?
Well, basically, I've already started campaigning. I've already walked the streets. And I've gone to my strongholds where I have my block captains. I have developed block captains. And I've talked to them. And we're going, and I think in about 2 weeks, in March the 7th, we have a little rally. And we're going to sit there and we're going to talk about issues, whatever issues they want to talk about, whatever problems they have with me, how we can correct them. And we can go from there.
That's an interesting date. That's 3 days before the primary.
Primary.
And you've got a Mexican-American incumbent commissioner, Martinez, Mario Martinez.
Right.
Are y'all collaborating with him and working with him?
Well, see, Mr. Martinez doesn't even have an opponent for the Democratic primary. So I've told people that they need to go vote for him, también, you know. And it's because our districts overlap each other. So what I generally do, I get a bunch of cards from Mario. And when I'm walking my district, I'll just hand out both cards. Now, if I've had people call me and ask me if I'm Senor Martinez, because that's what I did last time. They were calling me, Senor Martinez, my county road's messed up. What can you do? You know, and I try to explain, I'm not Senor Martinez, I'm Rocky Favilla. Remember the cards? Yeah, but you gave me the cards. So sometimes people get confused with those issues, yes. But that's why we're having this rally.
Is it going to be part of your rally, or is this just your rally by yourself?
It was going to be my rally by myself, but I was going to have an invitation for him if he wanted to go.
Okay.
So both of us could work it.
What organizations do you belong to?
Belong to LULAC, NHI, the Hispanic School Board Association, and what else? That's about it.
Okay. How much money did you spend the first time that you ran for office?
$800.
Is that your money?
All of it, my own.
And this time, how much money are you going to spend?
It depends if I have an opponent. If I don't have an opponent, the state of Texas passed a law that the elections are null and void. You know, we have no elections. Because you're the only person that signed up, so you're automatically the victor.
Not even if a write-in emerges?
Not even if a write-in emerges. If it doesn't happen by March 31st, there's no... election.
Wow, that's news to me. That's good. I'm glad you taught me something here.
Yeah, in fact, I was kind of shocked last year here in the city of Lubbock. There was 3 positions up and nobody ran except the incumbents. So
okay.
I'm waiting on that.
Does it help that you work for Energas? Do they interfere with you at all? Do they give you a free time, well, other than the vacation that you take?
Yes, they're very lenient with me. And some of the meetings that I have to go to and everything. They're very helpful. They don't hinder me. In fact, they encourage me. And they never say anything to me about it. Of course, I use vacation time too.
Other than what we discussed about city council, do you ever plan on running for any other office?
Not really. I would like to be county commissioner of my precinct when Mario gets tired of his being county commissioner. I would like to take that over. I think I've got different ideas of what to do, how to help the people. course, he's done a lot for everybody. But sometimes people bring ideas to you. They call me, you know, and have complaints, and I pass them on to Mario. And I think since he lives in about 20 miles away from the city, so he doesn't have a feel of what's going on in the city sometimes. And I think with my views here in the city, I could help, because 65% of his voters are in the city. I could help the voters in the city a little bit more, provide a summer feeding program, provide summer recreational programs, and just get the county to participate instead of it all falling on the shoulders of the school and the city.
Of course, you're on a nonpartisan government.
Right.
Running for county commissioner, do you think your company would be as lenient?
I don't know. I haven't asked him yet.
You would be willing to give up your job for that?
Yes. Yes, I would.
Well, where did you get this name, Rocky? What's your real name?
Mi nombre es Rogelio Favila.
And is that with a V like Victor or a B like boy?
Favila. B like Victor. Favila.
Well, tell me a little bit about your personal background, your biography, your parents, and where they're from, and how you got here.
Well, how I got here is a magical way. No. My parents son Espiridion y Gregoria Favila. And my dad was born in Sonora, Texas. And they were coming to visit a sister here in Plainview in 1946, and their car broke down. And they stayed here. They were on their way to Bakersfield, California to work. You know, they were migrants. And they were gonna go work in Bakersfield. And my grandfather's car broke down, so they stayed in Plainview. And at the time, they didn't realize it, but they were the second Mexican-American family there. So my grandmother, they set up a tent, which later became known as El Barrio. They set up a tent, and that's where they cooked and lived. And my dad says it's kind of funny. The farmers would show up and say, "You guys want a job? You can come hoe, you can come pull cotton for us." So what my grandmother did, she started calling her family in Sonora, "Hey, there's jobs over here. If you want a job, get over here." So eventually, the whole family moved up here, and it was like a workforce.
Now, what was your grandfather and grandmother's names?
Their names was Federico Favila y Paulín Favila.
Where were they from?
They were born in Sonora, Texas. My grandfather was born in 1901, and my grandmother was born in 1903.
You know how they got there?
Yes. My grandfather, his dad was a horse trainer. And he was working for, he was from Chihuahua, Mexico. And he came up to work on a ranch south of Del Rio for an English baron. And my grandfather was born there. And my grandmother, her family were coming from Mexico, Guadalajara. And it's kind of funny because her dad was an illegitimate son of a French soldier. So when Maximilian was ousted, the mother, my great-great-grandmother, brought her baby across into Texas. So that's how they ended up in Sonora, around that area.
So you were born and raised, when were you born?
I was born in Plainview, Texas in 1954, July 22nd, 54.
So you were born and raised there?
I was born and raised there.
What was it like growing up back in the 50s and 60s in Plainview?
Very nice. I didn't know that we were discriminated. I didn't know what discrimination was, because it was a very close-knit Hispanic community. Everything you wanted ahí en el barrio. So you didn't have to really go out into the Anglo community. I didn't know discrimination till I started playing Little League Baseball. When a little boy told me, "Hey, you chili bean, what are you doing on my team?"
Well, you must have been about 9 or 10.
Right? I was 6 years old.
Six?
Okay. I was on a Little League Baseball team. I went home. I asked my dad, "What's a chili bean?" He said, "Well, this is mexicano, mijo." "Oh, okay." And that was my first experience with discrimination. Also, another experience that happened to me was, that was the summer And then when I was starting my first grade, when I would try to attend the school that was, I thought was just a school, that's where I went to summer school, I was told no, that I had to go to a all-Mexican school in El Barrio. And to me, it was like, well, that's okay. That's where all my friends are going. I don't want to be over here with you guys. But that was my first brush with discrimination in Plainview.
Well, later you didn't accept that.
No.
What was it? When was it that you made the first stand or the first fight against that? Do you remember?
In the seventh grade.
What happened then?
It was kind of funny. It was an athletic coach, and we were taking our clothes off. And he said, okay, some of you guys throw your pants over here and your jock straps on this side, and you Mexicans throw your pants over here and your jock straps on this side. So I said, what for? Why? Because there's a difference. So what's the difference? He said, well, you don't want that brown skin coming off on these guys. At the time, he was making it like a joking manner. With him, it was a funny thing, you know. And I thought, you know, what's my brown skin got to do with washing clothes or where we throw our clothes down?
What'd you do about it?
Well, I told him what I thought about it, and he told me, you know, I was only playing with you. I thought, Coach, you know, there's nothing wrong with my skin. There's nothing wrong with having brown skin. He said, I know, I was just playing with you. But, you know, it made me think. People have biases. It doesn't matter if they're a school teacher, it doesn't matter who they are. They have biases. And that got me to thinking. And every time when I went to a class, I would sit there, you know, if I would do a, you know, how would they grade me? Was it because of my skin color or because of my effort? You know, and I always have that in my back of my mind. You know, how do they grade me? Does my skin color have to do anything with the attention I'm getting, or lack of attention, or lack of participation by the teacher, or asking for my participation in a certain group? Is it because I'm not really putting forth the effort, or is it because I'm putting forth the effort, or is it because of my skin color?
You still think like that today?
Sometimes. Sometimes when I see the problems, there is problems. And when a little kid comes to me and, why am I not doing this good? You know, I get to thinking back. Why? And I get to think, you know, I get to investigating this. Sometimes I find out it's a little of both. They take a look at us and say, well, he's lazy naturally. He's like the rest of them. And I keep explaining, we're all different. We have different ideas. We have different motivations, just like you guys. So, in a way, I think about it.
Where'd the name Rocky come from?
My first grade teacher, we had in our classroom, there was five guys named Rogelio. And I'm sitting there, you know, since I was the last one in that classroom, because I was, she said, well, I got Roger, Roy, Robert, and you're Rocky. So Rocky had stayed.
Okay. How about high school? What was it like in high school? Did you participate in sports? Did you run for club office?
I was in the student council in high school. I participated in sports. It was kind of funny. Todos los Mexicanos were dropping out. In fact, I was the only, there was two of us on the varsity football team. And I was telling my boys that sometimes adversity helps. Because my friends would put me down because I was playing football with all these white guys. And the white guys would put me down because I was the only Mexican on the football team, or one of the other Mexicans on the football team. So I got it from both sides. And I would try to tell them, hey guys, mira, you guys can be playing football if you want to. But you decided to take other classes. You decided to quit because you couldn't take the spring training. And I tell the gringos, hey, I'm an American like you guys, and I like football. And it's, you know, it helped me develop. It really helped me through the problems that I've had because football's just like life. You have your ups and your downs. And it really helped. I was on the student council in the high school, which it taught me a little bit about politics, how things ran.
How so?
Well, it's like I said, you know, we get in there, and at the time it was when kids wanted to have their hair long and wear bell-bottom pants, and we had a dress code restriction. And I remember all of us got together and presented this petition to the school board, in fact, and how we wanted to have the dress code abolished. And we went out there and campaigned with our classmates and everything, and it taught me about writing up petitions and getting people's signatures. And after we presented the petition to the school board, we abolished the dress code. Well, that worked. That was in there of 1971.
Were you aware that there was a Chicano movement going on at that time?
Not really.
When did you become aware of all that?
When a young boy was killed in Plainview in 1974. His name was Elicio Camargo.
Elicio or Eliseo?
Elicio Camargo. And he was killed in 1974 by a police officer in the Brown Beret. In fact, my wife was very instrumental in having a protest march. We had various speakers that came in. I was just thinking, trying to remember his name just a minute ago. He ran on the Chicano ticket for governor, I think, one time.
Ramsey Muñiz?
He didn't show up. There was another fellow. Ruben, I want to say, went somewhere. But anyway, that's when I found out about the Chicano movement. Well, after that accident.
What did you think about all that?
It gave me pride. I said, wow, you know, we're not out here by ourselves. I always thought we were so disorganized. You know, we was just one individual. But after everybody got together, you know, it proved to the whole community that if we wanted to, we could stand up for ourselves and to show what we were made of, you know. Not to be pushed around, but to be respected like everybody. That the laws are meant for everybody, not just a certain few.
In high school, did you have thoughts of becoming a astronaut or a pharmacist or anything like that? Did you want to go to college? Or
my thoughts were being a history teacher. I wanted to rewrite history, but through Mexican's eyes, instead of being a glorious Texas Revolution, you know, hey, we were fighting for independence, I wanted to say, hey, these men came into our country, a sovereign nation, armed to take it away from a peaceful community. They took it by violence. And then they got upset because the government sent soldiers to repel them. You know, and I sat there, we gained independence, but independence from what? We were independent. We were, and sure, it was a dictatorship, but virtually we were independent. Then we became, instead of being proud landowners, we became their peasant farmers, and then we became a nuisance. It's kind of funny. That's what I wanted to write history in my views.
I take it that with those views, you must have had a lot of discussions with your history teachers.
I did have a lot of discussions with my history teacher.
How'd that go?
He was very helpful. I had this teacher, in fact, We just hired his wife as a principal in one of our elementary schools, and his name's Mr. Norris. And he thoroughly enjoyed my views because he would say, that's a different perspective. I'm glad that you're thinking. Because a lot of kids wouldn't think. They would just write down what they wanted. I would sit there and tell a whole different narrative of the Alamo or whatever was going on at the time, and he really enjoyed that. He encouraged me.
Where'd you get your ideas?
I don't know. I think from within myself.
You just figured it out?
I just figured it out.
Okay.
Because I was so upset of reading in the encyclopedias and everything. They had no view but this Anglo view, right? That's all they had. They didn't have a Mexican-American view.
So did you go to college?
No.
What happened?
Well, I was on my way to college, but things just didn't go right for me. So I decided to go work with my dad. I just sit there and I would work with my dad. Of course, I had plenty of time to go to the library and read magazines, books, anything that was current, you know. And I would sit there, I used to spend endless hours reading into any subject, any historical subject. I love history.
So what did you do right after high school then, other than work with your dad? Did you go to the military or?
No. I just decided to work with my dad. I never went to the military or didn't do anything else like that. I wanted to, but that want to and just, I'd go, yeah, well, better not. Now I can kick myself. That's what I want my children to do, have the opportunities to do anything they want to, that I'm there for them, that I'll provide them with any kind of financial support, any kind of support, moral support, because I want them to reach for the stars. If they have something they want to do, I'm there to help them. If they want to just be a historian and go and find out where we came from, I'll help them.
Well, you mentioned children. When did you get around to thinking, I want to start a family? Who did you pick to start a family with, and how did all that develop?
Well, I was married prior to mine and Irene's marriage. In 1975, I married Elizabeth Peña, and I had two daughters by her.
Was she local?
She's a local girl.
Where did they come from?
They came from Runnels County, Ballinger, around San Angel area. They came from that area.
What are those two girls' names?
The first one, Cecilia Favila, and the next one is Lucinda Favila.
So now they're probably in their 20s, no?
Yeah, they're in their 20s. They live there in Plainview. They're doing okay. One of them, the oldest one, she's just working. She didn't want to take any extra education or anything, so she's working on her own. And the second one, she recently got married last year, and she's going to try to take her LVN license. She likes it in the medical field, so I said, fine, we could help you out in that. That's what you want.
So then what happened?
Then kept on working, then got divorced from her. Got divorced from my first wife, and I met Irene. I had known Irene since we were 16 and 15 years old. We had known each other. And she, at the time, she was single and I was single. We got together and got married, which is a very, very nice union, because tomorrow's gonna be our 14th anniversary. It'll be March the 2nd.
You remember?
I keep telling her. I know exactly when our anniversary's at.
Well, Rocky, I don't have any more questions. Is there anything that you want to touch on that I didn't ask you about, or anything that you want to talk about as your statement for your interview?
What I want people to think about, or I want whoever listens to this, is that I want them to look at their roots. Do not forget your roots. Never deny your heritage, because we have a wonderful heritage, each one of us. We all have something to contribute. Write down, if you're a parent, write down a narrative for your child, exactly where you came from, who your forefathers were, what they did, what you did, and what happened. And then encourage your children to reach for the stars, to reach for whatever they want to. If they want to be a writer, encourage them to be a writer. If they want to be a scientist, encourage them to be a scientist or a doctor. Never hold them down to a certain field that you want them to be like. Don't say, hey, son, you're never going to be anything. Take this job because you're not going to be what you want to be. No, encourage them. Encourage them to be whatever they want it to be. Earlier you asked me about early political influences. I have a tia. She was my dad's oldest sister. Name's Lucia Santana. She's from Abilene, Texas. And she was a big mover in the American GI Forum there in Abilene. In fact, they led several protests there in Abilene, you know, because Abilene was a vocal point in the 60s for Mexican-American discrimination. So I guess, you know, I came through it naturally through her. Some of my ideas.
I didn't ask you about brothers and sisters. I guess I forgot about that. Do you have brothers and sisters? Who are they?
I have one brother. His name's Leroy Favilla. He lives in Plainview. He's married. He's been married for 20 years, and he has one child. His name's Tanner, and he's 14 years old right now.
Okay. Well, did you talk to your aunt? I mean, did you visit with her, or how did this relationship develop, or did you just know about her and watched her?
No. I used to visit them, and they, you know, she was very outspoken, a very vocal person, still is, and I don't know, she gave me a lot of ideas about self, to look in myself, to see what type I was, what type of person I was, and to never negate your heritage, never forget where you came from. That's what she always told me. That's what I tell my boys, you know, do not forget who you are. You know, remember who you are. Tell people you're proud of your heritage. Tell people you're proud of your heritage. Don't be scared. Tell them you're Mexican. I'd rather be a Mexican than a lot of other things. You know, but...
All right. Well, I want to thank you for taking time from your schedule and then on Sunday afternoon. I'm sure that there's better things to do with the boys and the family and the pre-anniversary preparations.
Oh, yeah, the pre-anniversary preparations. No, it's my pleasure, and I'm very honored to have been interviewed by you, Este. I've always thought my life is, you know, it's very quiet. I don't believe, you asked me ya ratito about leadership. I don't look at myself as a leader. I look at myself as a person just trying to help. And, you know, I'm very honored by it, just by being interviewed by you. So thank you.
Appreciate it. All right.